둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by SoundMind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I'm Leo Phillips, host of This Must Be The Gig. We're a weekly podcast that documents everything about the world of live music. Speaking with choreographers, costume and set designers, the people who run beloved venues and festivals, and, of course, speaking with musicians about that one gig that changed their lives. Get your peek behind the curtain at consequenceofsound.net, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. If you're not a subscriber to the series already, I hope you hit that subscribe button. We put out interviews multiple times every single week, usually 3 to 5 interviews every single week. So if you're a music fan or you just like hearing great discussions about music, hit that subscribe button right now at any of your favorite downloading spots, podcasting spots, including iTunes and Apple Podcasts and Spotify and YouTube. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today I'm talking with Kate Tempest. The poet, writer, musician, etc., 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 has a brand new album called The Book of Traps and Lessons. We're going to talk about working with Rick Rubin on this and what went in to all of the big themes that make up one of the coolest and I really think most important records of at least this year and maybe even more than that. There are big themes, including the socio-political nature of our lives right now, but also the very small moments. And she weaves these in and out so well. And Kate's going to take us on the journey of what the character experiences from the beginning of the record to who they become towards the end of the record. And we'll also talk about the sound. You know, you can't look at this as a spoken word album, but the music that's going on behind it is so infectious. The minimalism, the grooves. As you can tell, I'm a really big fan of this album. And we'll also hear what it was like performing a piece like this at the Glastonbury Festival just this past summer. Talking about the record, The Book of Traps and Lessons, it's Kyle Meredith with Kate Tempest.
Hello.
Well, let me give you the compliments. This album, The Book of Traps and Lessons, it sort of blew me away and shook up my world, and I can't stop thinking about it. So the highest compliments there.
Well, thank you for being open to it and for listening.
Yeah, it's such an interesting project. You know, there's a few points we could start on here. I thought, you know, one of the easiest ones, as the story goes, you teamed with Rick Rubin for this. You know, he kind of sought you out after seeing you on a program. He's known for having a very hands-off approach. What was your studio relationship like?
Yeah, he's pretty hands-off. Absolutely, but I suppose his role is more a role of guidance than the role of producer that I'm used to. You know, I work really closely with Dan Carey, my producer, who produced my first two records. And that relationship is so much more involved. You know, we're writing together and we're talking about every single decision about which snare goes where and everything like that. But with Rick, it was much more that we would create music, we'd create demos, and then he would come in for an hour and he'd listen to what we'd made. And then he'd talk about it with us. And then he'd leave us to keep writing, keep working. And then he'd come back in late in the afternoon or early in the evening and he'd listen again to what we'd made. Sometimes he would come in twice in the day, sometimes just once, depending on what was going on for him and in the rest of the studio. And maybe there's a part of you when you're kind of lost in the creative process and things are feeling challenging that wants more input or needs a bit more attention or something like that. But actually what happens is that you discover that the decisions Rick hopes you'll make are decisions that he can't make for you. He just needs to encourage you to go on that journey to make those decisions if it's right for the idea. And the amount of faith that he has in me, that's the faith that I feel he has, is a faith that encourages me to stick with the challenges and go through it. And then when he comes in, it's like it's actually an amazing opportunity to have fresh ears on a demo, because by the time you've finished the demo or made a bunch of songs, you've heard them, you know, so many times you're so exhausted from them because you don't even realize. But when you've been listening to the same song or the same lyrics for 4 hours because you've been recording it or writing it or making it, you lose perspective. So then he would come in as a kind of fresh perspective and he would offer some guidance about how best to, you know, move forward.
And hearing a song you're talking about over and over, I read that when it finally came time to lay this down, single takes, album in its entirety, 3 times a day, 3 days straight, which, if that's true, oh my God, what is the emotional expense of something like that? Because this is heavy material.
Well, I think that it's the emotional expense is correct. Like, this is high stakes. It should feel that you're really going through something and that you're really getting through something when I am recording, you know, songs like these or an album like this. I feel like it's absolutely right that it takes a lot of focus and energy and determination and clarity to begin and continue for 45 minutes, because that's how you're expecting your audience to engage with it. So unless you're meeting them there in that same space, then I think it's harder to ask for their attention unless you're giving the same, you know?
And, you know, coming at it from a radio point of view too, of course, you know, we'll play one song at a time or something like that, but it always I feel like I'm doing something wrong occasionally. I love, like, you know, of course, we played Fire Smoke and I've really latched onto Holy Elixir, you know, putting it on the air, but I can't do that at home, obviously. You know, it's not like a hit and a shuffle. Like, once I've hit play, it's that commitment is there whether I knew it or not. I'm not stopping.
Wow, that's really, I'm glad to hear that's how you're engaging with it. But I think it's kind of important to say that even though I hope people will listen to it that way, I understand that that isn't the way that people listen to music. And it's also exciting for me that somebody may discover a song on the radio if you play, you know, Fire Smoke, or they may discover a song on a playlist or something. And hopefully these pieces work like that. You know, I don't know, because I think of it as one piece, but hopefully they have their space, even when it's just a little few minutes extract, you know.
Well, when I listen to it, you know, I think one of the things that I really enjoy hearing is that there's this very big picture thing happening throughout it, but all these small stories in between. And it seems like that might have been important for you to kind of, you know, when we're talking about the big picture, obviously there's environmental catastrophe, there's the politicalness of everything, but there seems to be very personal stories happening. Is that the way that you wanted it to come across?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the album is hoping to create this this kind of sense of the tension between the smallness of a life and the hugeness of the context in which that life exists. And the album is intentionally trying to create an environment to express how that feels to be a person alive, and, you know, with the things that a person has to do. Like in the album, it's brushing your teeth or doing your shoelaces up or standing at the station getting a cup of coffee. But these things are not isolated moments. They form part of a much bigger framework of cause and effect, event, time, you know. So not only is that person at the train station getting that coffee, that person is also in the town, in the city, in the country, in the nation, in the continent, you know, on the planet. And I think that we are all, as we move through our lives, aware of this stuff, and it creates this kind of heavy breathlessness to our days. And I wanted the album, I wanted that to be happening on the album for sure.
There are a few mentions of your crumbling country, as you put it. Mm-hmm. I had wondered, 2016, obviously, the song Europe is Lost came out, and is this the lost Europe? I feel that's a pretty obvious question, but is that how you see it too?
Oh man, it's a very strange time in the UK right now. I mean, it's a strange time everywhere, I suppose. I mean, all I can say is that I think that Brexit is a symptom of a deeper problem, a deeper sense of rootlessness, exhaustion, fear, and Brexit didn't surprise me, doesn't surprise me. It's, it hasn't even happened yet. It may never happen. Who knows what's going to go on with it. What bothers me and what hurts is some of the trend in factionism that's happening, which is, it's bizarre. It's bizarre. Nobody really knows what's going on here as well. It's like, but we've just got a new prime minister who's built his, I don't want to talk about it. It's just so grim. It's so grim. I don't think the album is intentionally dealing with that stuff, but because that stuff is going on, it does come out. So I think that it's important to say that when you're writing, you often don't even realize how much you have absorbed about something until you see it come out. And, it's like you suddenly see how you've been feeling about something because there it is in the song. Mm-hmm. But it's not like I intended to make an album that had something to say about Brexit. I've got nothing to say about it apart from just I don't know what it's all about.
It is interesting how the journey plays over the record too, because by track 4, three-sided coin, there's the line, "Why not lock yourself in?" Or, well, I think I'm saying it wrong, but paraphrasing.
That's okay.
There. But
yeah, how you like? It's yours now. I made it. Now it's yours.
Well, I think I wrote down the idea, not the actual lyrics, but the idea of just lock yourself in, and that's where we are in the early part of it. But that does change. I mean, there is hope in Hold Your Own only a few tracks later, and I felt, to me, that was important. Obviously, I'm in the U.S. We're dealing with very similar things, just beyond the fine details of what it's called, the division over here, and to kind of go on that journey through this, because by the time you get there, that's needed, that bit of advice. And the mood sort of changes, too, musically on I Trap You, but it's not like that's sort of a juxtaposition, right? So, I mean, it goes lighter, but not exactly.
Yeah, it's like a terrifying kind of circus carousel, like it's a bizarre bit of musicality that we had a lot of fun experimenting with. It just felt right that there was something so sweet being played on the piano while something so sinister is being said. It's such a dark lyric, really, but setting it against that music gives it this kind of sense of innocence, which I think it needs. Otherwise, it would be difficult to listen to. And I whenever I perform it live, we've been touring over the summer, and it's actually something I enjoy saying with a smile on my face. I love saying it, actually. I love standing there and saying, "I trap you," and "I trap you so much." And I see all these couples looking at me and looking at each other and being like, "Oh no!" But it feels like, it doesn't feel accusatory. It just feels like an acknowledgement of something that so often happens in relationships. And it's kind of tongue-in-cheek when we do it live. But on the record, I suppose, it serves a more serious purpose, which is that the speaker of these poems is coming to this realization about their own behavior in their own relationships when they've exhibited behaviors which have been damaging, which is what the whole first part of the album is kind of about, this damaging patterns of behavior that this person is trapped in. And whether that's like violence of the state against an individual or the violence of this person against their partner in terms of an obsession rather than a kind of healthy, abundant, loving relationship, they realize that they've been trapping this other person. The whole of the first album is dealing with how this person feels they are trapped in their own behaviors. And then the whole next part of the album, beginning with Hold Your Own, is supposed to be the book of lessons. That's where this person is trying to actually do something about this realization they've had, this awareness they've suddenly got about their own behavior, and they're trying to desperately put this into practice and learn the lessons and change the behaviors.
Does the character become a better person by the end of it?
Well, the final song, People's Faces, I think it's just an expression of real tender love for strangers. And I think that that's a really positive and beautiful place for this person to find themselves in. I think that's a real mark of progress in this person's life, to be able to just fully and truly notice other people's experience and love them, love strangers. Mm-hmm. I think that's, hopefully it's a positive and hopeful note to leave the album on.
I did want to ask about the music. We kind of brushed on it there, too. So much attention is obviously paid to the lyrics for good reason. The music matches all of these sounds so much, whether, you know, it's talking about the, you know, the juxtaposition of I Trap You or just the amazing grooves that go throughout it. Is there something you all went into saying this record needs to sound like this?
No, this was the whole beautiful thing about what the process of making this album, is that we had no idea what it was going to sound like or what it was going to be. All that we knew was that Rick had this kind of vision and he wanted to create music out of my poetry, with my poetry, that broke the conventions of hip-hop, even though it begins in a hip-hop environment, it breaks all the conventions of hip-hop, that breaks all the conventions of our own creative work, you know, like, so, and that's lyrically and musically. So we would generate all these demos, and if there was something that Rick was excited by, he would encourage us, Dan Carey and I, Dan Carey who writes the music, he would encourage us to pursue a certain sound or a certain idea. He might say, you know, I like the lyric here, but I don't, you know, I think we can do something different with the music. And so then we would often come away from meetings like that, scratching our heads, being like, wow, we love this beat. Like, what's he talking about? And because he couldn't say, I want you to break convention, because he didn't know that's what he wanted us to do. He's just looking for a recognition of this idea that he has. He's trying to just see his vision, basically.
Right.
So we went on this crazy journey with the music where it started off where Rick was like, I don't want any drums. I don't want to make an album with drums. So then me and Dan were like, wow, what do we do? So we got the guitar out. We wrote, you know, wrote these like kind of folk songs. And then we realized that we could have drums. It's just that I had to not lock in with them. I had to go at the pace of the lyric and not lock in with the beat, because when I lock in with the beat, the lyric just becomes part of the music and it stops having its own integrity. So that was like a moment of revelation. We were like, wow, we can have beats, like, you know. And then it was about what kind of musical landscapes we could produce. And the more abstract, the more sonically abstract, the better, the more Rick was excited by it. So what we've ended up with on the album has been it's just been a beautiful process of trial and error. And the music and the lyrics, they've had life together from the whole process. They may have started their lives together, like I Trap You. Those two, that lyric and that music, that they began their life together, they belong together. But something like Brown Eyed Man, that had like four different musical accompaniments before we found that particular one. People's Faces, that began with Dan playing the chords, and he woke up from a dream with this song in his head, these chords in his head, and we started to write. And the first draft of that song is pretty much 60%, 70% of the song that ended up on the album. And so the relationship between lyric and music, it's been an amazing journey and really unlike anything else I've ever attempted to do. And same with Dan.
And it's interesting to hear, of course, a lot of these tracks, you know, they bleed straight into the other ones. And I thought, well, there's no way she probably wrote this in sequence like that. And you know, so does the way, did it ever happen where the way one song ended dictated how you wanted to write the next song or something like that?
No, so what we did is that we ended up with a situation where we had six songs or five or six songs that Rick said, okay, these are exceptional. These are the songs. This is what the album is going to sound like. This is what's working. And when we had that breakthrough, then because for the whole time, don't forget, we didn't know what was going on. It was like at any minute, we thought we understood it. And then he'd be like, no, 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 this isn't right. So finally we got to the point where he said, yeah, these are the songs. And then we took those songs away and we looked at them and we realized that there was a kind of shape appearing, you know, and lyrically and musically we started to realize that this was the beginning of an album. And then we began to write the shape of, you know, we began to fill in the detail, essentially. Mm-hmm. So it's like, now we know that these songs are going to be the bones of this thing. Now we can start to flesh it out. And the idea of themes reoccurring and the music not stopping all the way through and linking and references being made to previous musical motifs and also lyrically things being repeated throughout, that was definitely something that we began thinking about from that moment. We wanted to make it feel coherent, because also my previous albums have been narratives. They've been like deeply involved narrative pieces of work. And Rick was just, he was like, look, break your convention, you know. He's not interested in me saying, here is a town, here are the people. He has a stronger reaction to me saying, I have seen, I have felt. But I needed the songs and the album to still have a feeling of cohesion, because I believe that an album should feel like, you know, one piece of work. I wanted it to feel like that. And even though there wasn't a story running through it, you know, explicitly at that point, a story began to appear out of it. And that's when we wrote Thirsty and we wrote Keep Moving, Don't Move. And it all just, it began to take shape from that moment, really.
And it sounds, I mean, it sounds perfect. It sounds like everything is exactly where it should be.
That's the mystery of making an album.
Right.
Once it's finished, it just sounds like it began that way.
Yeah.
But like, actually, we worked on this for like 5 years, you know, on and off,
right,
between different projects. So it's, you know, some of the demos that we made, it's just like ridiculous, like bizarre experiments. So, I mean, I agree with you. I feel like right now when I listen to it, it feels finished. And that's because I know as well, like, the journey that we've been on to get to the point where we can say, that's the album. Okay, we did it, you know.
And then once it's done, you've taken it out on the road. What was Glastonbury like, you know, in that kind of setting, you know, for an hour to perform something like this? Is it different?
I mean, like, Glastonbury is, for me, a very special place. And I had an incredible time. I felt, you know, absolutely overwhelmed, but also in control and you know, secure and content. Like, the last time I played Glastonbury, I was kind of freaking out. And this time I just felt so close to the music and so close to the lyrics. And I felt so overjoyed to have the opportunity to share with a load of people who are having a very particular kind of weekend. And then you come out into that space with these lyrics. And I think you just have to be completely prepared to be like, okay, so this isn't really party time. And this isn't like the songs that you know and love. And this isn't even like anything impressive in terms of like bass lines or guitar solos or anything like that. What this is going to be is what I do best. And it's like having the courage to go out there with such a stripped down performance. And just, you know, it's just me and Claire Uchima, who plays with me. She plays the synths. And it's just us two on stage together. It's so stripped down. And in some ways, it's the scariest thing in the world to do that. But I feel like the fact that we took that risk at Glastonbury, I think it really paid off. I felt like the audience were like, oh, wow, okay. This is connecting with a different part of me right now. And I think there's space for that at any gathering. There's space to go a little deeper. Definitely, that's what music's for, you know. So, I mean, also, you want to be able to have a good time and party and, you know, just dance. But I think for an hour throughout the whole weekend to just connect with this kind of performance, it felt like it went well. I felt really happy and overjoyed and lucky and just proud.
It is great to watch the video of that and just to see, as you're saying, in a festival setting and how we think about a festival setting and how people react, but just to see everyone so completely still and staring right at you and just taking it all in. Like, it's really noticeable, you know, to see something like that. And I'm only envious that I wasn't there. Kate, it is such a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much. Congratulations on the Book of Traps and Lessons.
Thank you so much for your time, and have a great rest of your day.
You too. Bye.
Speak to you later. Bye.
Oh, my thanks. Kate Tempest, the new album is called The Book of Traps and Lessons. Hey, before you get out of here, remember, hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out here every single week. Again, iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, anywhere you get your favorite podcast from. Just grab your favorite listening device and type in Kyle Meredith With. And if you're already a subscriber, thank you. Leave us a message. Give a hello. Give the series a rating. That's always a huge, huge help if you can give the series a rating, a review, or anything like that. And after that, head to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. I play new songs from the day. We do some anniversary celebrations. You'll get music news and, of course, clips from these interviews as well. That's WFPK.org. ConsequenceOfSound.net has your music and film news. You can also find me at Twitter at Kyle Meredith and Facebook /Kyle Meredith. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.